This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome to Moneymaker, the podcast that gives you the tools to enrich your life in every sense of the word. I'm your host, Nelly Galan. Let's get started. Let's meet Hattie Hill. She's got an amazing story, and I can't wait for you to hear all the opportunities for you. Hattie, thank you so much for sharing your self-made story with us. How did this all begin? Because I know you're a long-term entrepreneur, but you didn't start out that way. So go back to the very beginning.
So, you know, I think the issue with entrepreneurship or the concern is more, do I have the guts to do it? And so I grew up watching entrepreneurship. My dad was an entrepreneur. But the hard...
Tell everybody, what did your dad do?
Oh, my dad had the only black cleaners in a really small town in Arkansas. And so I knew he had his business, but he also worked because you never thought that you... could sort of just let the business be the business. But I would go in the summers, because he and my mom were divorced, so I would go in the summers and work at the cleaners and take money. And it was hard work, it was labor. But I actually saw entrepreneurship, do the books. I saw all that when I was
So he worked a job and he had his business,
yes.
Which I think is how most entrepreneurs begin.
Absolutely.
Right? Mission and money.
Yeah.
It's the way we all started, right? Yeah. You know, you're not completely ready to take the leap. And right. I say that to women a lot. Don't feel like... When we talk about entrepreneurship, I don't want people to feel like it's some grandiose thing that from one day to the next you're going to leave everything and risk it all.
Absolutely.
No one does it that way.
No one
that's smart does it that way.
There's always paying the bills, right? So you have to be realistic. I always thought I would be an entrepreneur, but my undergraduate degree was political science and history. I was going to be a lawyer. And then I went back and got a degree in psychology.
Which serves you in whatever you do.
Yeah. So I love that part. But the piece is entrepreneurship is really you start with your passion, and that's what most people go for. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, I love doing this. Mm-hmm. This is great. And what I loved about your book and the whole self-made concept was that it really, what I was doing really was self-made. Because if you think about it, I moved into consulting.
And so you had a job consulting.
I had a job as a psychologist.
That was interesting because I don't think people realize that even in psychology there are these different kinds of fields. So talk about that, those first jobs you had using your psychology degree in corporations.
Yeah, when I first started, I was actually working in rehabilitation. So I was using that degree to work with people who were disabled, which was amazing and interesting. But I was always doing something else. And that's what women, we really have to know that I was always part-time. So I was teaching and doing different things just because I enjoyed it. And so that's where I really started to get the bug that, you know, this is a lot of fun over here, but this pays the bills. Mm-hmm. And so I then was promoted in my job to director of training. And that's when I really figured out that I love to watch the mind work. I love to watch people learn. But I really did it for like 3-4 years, and I would just do the speaking part-time and the training, and that was great. And then I stopped and went, you know, this is actually a business. But I need to stop and figure out how to make sure, because, you know, to me it's a hobby if there's no revenue involved.
That's right.
Right?
And you're right. And by the way, that's a really important thing to say to women, because so many people feel like they don't realize they're in the hobby mode. And that, I'm doing what I love, but they're not making any money. If you're not making money, it's not a business.
Right.
And money is very important. And, you know, I say to women, money comes first because you have to take care of yourself.
Right. Well, you have to have a plan. So I was talking to my mom, and we still have this farm in Arkansas, and my mother, who's 81, is still there. And I was telling her, she said, so not really understanding the concept of consulting and all that. And she said, so you're going to stop your job and start talking to people. That was
scary.
Very simple though, right? Mm-hmm. Take it down to the lowest common denominator. And you get paid for, I said intellectual capital, and she just looked at me like,
what the heck is that?
That's right. Like, you know, it's intellectual capital and you help people. Now, okay, got that. So here's what my mother said, and I think this is so important for women. Mm-hmm. My mother said, baby, if that doesn't, just try it. And if it doesn't work, you can always come home.
That's right.
And that's really all you need to know, is that if in the middle of the night this crashes, I have some place where it's a friend's couch, whether it's, you know, home with family, but you always have to have a plan, because entrepreneurship, no matter how wonderful it is, if you talk to most entrepreneurs, they fail forward a few times.
They do. No, and I think, you know, it's so funny because I speak to so many women who are immigrants, and I'm an immigrant myself, and that's got to be our mindset, right? That we're going to try this out, and also that we know we've been in worse situations. So,
exactly.
So what if it doesn't go well?
Right, exactly.
I want to talk about that those first jobs in corporations doing this work that you were doing. Tell us exactly what that was.
So the first major job was a friend of mine, and she was head of HR, and she had... was working with a new management team. And we were friends, actually, and had Thanksgiving together. And she said, Hattie, and I was teaching part-time, still doing that, and had my job. And so she asked if I would help her with this new team she was putting together, and they needed some management consulting, was really what it was. And she said, do you know how to do this? And I said, sure. And so I said, well, after the holiday, I'll come over and I'll, you know, lay it all out for you, how to put it together and everything. So I did, and she was like, oh, this is perfect, thank you. You know, there were some focus groups that needed to be done. I mean, there was all this, these processes to put in place to get this new team. And I said, oh, no problem. She said, no. She said, we actually pay people to do what you just did. I said, oh, really? Oh,
so you were getting ready to do it as a favor for her for free.
I was
going to
do it as a favor, which is the way
a lot of women
get into business,
we don't know how to charge.
Yeah, we already know, definitely. I said, no, you know, we always want to donate, right? And she said, no, and that's a true friend. That's a true friend who recognizes if we're paying someone else to do this, we should be paying you. You're my friend and I appreciate it, but no. And she helped me do the invoice. She showed me how to do everything because I really didn't know how to do all that.
And that sparked something in you.
And I
thought,
this
is money. There's money here.
Yeah, this is, and I made more in a day than I did a month. I mean, it was great. It was like, okay, this is good. So then you know what you don't know, right? And so that's when I went on a true quest to figure out what I had actually stumbled into.
And so how did you turn that one idea into now getting more clients and actually turning it into a business?
So it was really mentors. I reached out to people that I knew and said, okay, tell me what this is. And there was this amazing woman, and she literally, in the back room of her house, had worked with some, like, Zig Ziglar and some of the other professional speakers and went for coaching. I mean, she really walked me through, and she said, you know, most people fail, but this is something that I think you can do if you're willing to do the back. It's the back end that gets us in trouble. The walking out in front and talking to people, that part was easy, but it is, how do you monetize this on a day-to-day basis? And so that's where I had to go and just learn.
And so with these companies that you were working with, was there, I noticed that you worked with a lot of food companies, right? Mm-hmm. So these companies, and you would go all over the world.
Yes.
So explain that these companies have organizations all over the world and in different parts of the world.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you take like a McDonald's. I mean, I was working with McDonald's in Chicago, but we would do development all over the world. I mean, they've got global women's organizations, and they would have their big manager meetings, and we did road tours. And so McDonald's was my first big client in the food world, and they were amazing and very supportive. And I really learned a lot working with them, not only how to do the external, but how to even work on my own business.
Really?
Yeah.
See, so it's incredible. And then again, how would you go and market yourself to all these companies? Was it that one company would tell another company?
Exactly. It's total word of mouth. I mean, there are certain businesses that are special in that people trust other people. So if you think about it, the business that I'm in, the consulting world, was really organization development, human resources. So it was some stuff that a lot of times could get really personal, because if the company's in trouble, there are legal issues. And so our organization would be called in to come in and do an assessment of the situation and offer solutions to the organization. So when you have a problem, you call people that you know and you trust, and they work with someone you know and trust. So 99.9% of my business has always been word of mouth. I mean, it was, I never marketed myself.
But I think these are key takeaways for women, because, you know, and you know, my first business that I started was launching TV channels for American companies abroad. Right. And it was, again, something I fell into because I was off trying to make TV shows. And I realized, oh my God, these companies are calling me to consult with them.
Right.
And I realized, well, why am I consulting? Why don't I just take the business and they outsource it to me?
Yeah.
And so it was kind of an aha. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, in entrepreneurship, we're all solving problems, right? Entrepreneurship is taking something, either you invent a problem that exists for yourself that you find the solution for, or kind of noticing around you. Sometimes it's sent to you and right. It's right under your nose right. And you just have to pay attention and realize once you figure it out, then the doors start opening.
Exactly.
Not that it's easy and perfect, but you just go, oh, wow, it was there for the taking.
Well, it's that quiet. You have to find, because see, you get quiet enough, you can see the opportunity. But so often with women, we're so busy moving mm-hmm. that you miss the opportunity.
But one of the things I know you talk about a lot, and I really admire it, because I think you even did this better than me, because I think as a Latina, where I failed is, in my business, I started a business, it went well, but like all businesses, it doesn't go well every single year.
Right.
And I know you speak a lot about you kind of created a team,
yeah,
right?
Right?
An accountant that you've used, the
yeah,
same account.
Yeah.
I think this idea of women going and finding a team,
right.
Organizations that help you,
right.
Mentors, like we can't figure it out ourselves. We're not just like born and we know how to do these businesses.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, absolutely. So probably the greatest resource, friend, blessing in my life is my finance guy, right? So I met him on a plane flying back, I'll never forget, it was Des Moines, Iowa, and it was storming, the plane got hit by lightning. We were probably all really praying, but we were talking because everybody was nervous.
Because it was a bad flight.
But he owned wealth management firm, right? And so he became not only a mentor, a friend, just an absolute guide to my life of how you know, it's not what you make, it's what you keep. It's not, you know, it's
all the things that when we talk about it, women don't hear those things,
yeah,
right?
That, you know, when you see that money, you know, take the taxes off the top. And so.
And make money while you sleep.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, that was probably my attorney, because so much of what we do, there were legal issues within the organizations and consultants often get blamed. And
right.
Even how to manage my own, I've been deposed more times because, you know, when legal issues in organizations and them letting people go and the consultants who come in to work with you, you literally have to prepare yourself at any moment to be deposed. So the pieces of not only, then I figured out I can't do all this by myself. So the team then started to expand. But very different from people who go, oh, we got to go hire a lot of people. I contracted people. So at the height of our company, I had 30 consultants. I had a team internal anywhere between 8 to 10 people, depending. Mm-hmm. We always had a great resource that we used to bring in temps and all that. So when you have big organizational issues where they got 20,000 people and you've got to talk to them, you had to have a team that you depended on as opposed to just, I got to go do it myself. And that's a tough thing, too, I think, for women. When we go, oh, I need to do it all myself, no, you really don't. Mm. What I've learned, and I know you do this too, Natalie, is there's a point as executives that you have to stop and say, what am I really good at and what do I need to take my hands off? And that's a scary point because we...
But you know, you're right. Is really know what you're good at.
Know what you're good at.
And sometimes what you're good at is not what you love the most.
Right, right.
I think that's shocking too. Like, I think for me, I really didn't like math in school, but I would always test well in math. And I realized I was really good at math. And I had to really come to the conclusion that I hadn't been taught math very well. Mm-hmm. And I hired tutors.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And I feel like my strength in what I do is my accounting skills, which, you know, nobody would think, right? But I have accounting skills. It's not my favorite skill that I have,
right.
But I have it.
Well, and you need to.
We have to embrace these things.
I mean, if you cannot be an entrepreneur and not understand the books. I mean, it just, to me, I just don't.
But you know what? A lot of entrepreneurs that I meet on the road, they say, well, I let someone else handle that.
Right.
And I just don't, like, that's not one of those things that you can completely let go of.
Well, my mentor that I was telling you, Larry, said to me, he said, you can hire an accountant, but who's watching the accountant?
That's right.
I'll always remember, I was home with the flu when Oprah first started her show in Dallas.
Yeah.
And she talked about signing the checks. And he told me the same thing. He said, I don't care how successful you are. You always
sign
all your checks.
Oh, yeah. So many women I meet on the road, they're like, we don't sign. I said, oh, no, 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 no. That's a red flag. Right?
Right. Well, here's what happened. So to me, there are three skills with business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Relationship building. That's how you get those business, the business.
Right.
Who do you know,
right?
So it's relationship building. And then the operations of it. And to me, that comes in the basics of it, the operation of the business. I have to understand not only what's coming in, but what's going out. And it's the flow of that process that truly makes you an entrepreneur, in my opinion.
Right.
And then it's executing on what you promise. Yeah.
And let's talk about that, because okay. This is a big one for me.
Okay.
Because I feel like when I meet a lot of women, they start things, they give up, and they don't complete things. And for me, the holy grail is start, even if you start a small thing, if you decide to do something, complete,
yeah.
Finish.
Yeah.
And because most people don't finish.
Yeah, and the learning is in the finish, whether you finish ahead, in the middle, behind, but still complete it, because the learning is, for example, I started an international group of trainers that I worked with for a while, and it was great, but I was zipping all over the world, and it's like, I don't know if I want to live like this forever, and I started to close it down, and it was great financially, but that wasn't what I wanted to continue doing, and so I said, okay, here's how we close this down. Let's finish it out. Let's run the contracts. Let's have all the meetings. And once you do that, you go, okay, that was a great chapter. But then I closed that chapter and opened the other one. You didn't say, oh, I'm just stopping that because it's too hard. It was
right.
Just, no, let's figure out a way to transition it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of women struggle with that.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about in your business, were there years, because again, a lot of women I speak to, they're like, I'm going to give up. And by the way, I've been there, where you start something and you hit a bad economy. I've had three bad economies in my entrepreneurial life. And that you're in the hole. You're in the hole and you go, okay, dear God, send me a sign. Am I supposed to give up now? I mean, I've been there, so I get it. But I've hung in there, and those were the moments where I think I grew. Like I would join the Chamber of Commerce, mm-hmm. or I would join YPO, or some place where I would get help.
Yeah, exactly.
So for you, how did that come up?
You know, the biggest issue for me was 9/11. So think about it. We've got a consulting team. We work by getting on a plane, mm-hmm. going to companies, right? Mm-hmm. So when the companies stopped having meetings, that was it. So I was actually in Philly, no, I was in North Carolina, mm-hmm. when 9/11 happened. Oof. And we had just signed a major deal with one of the airlines, multi-million dollar deal, and I was driving with one of our vice presidents, and we had to drive home, right, because we couldn't fly. So I'm driving, we can't sleep because we're all hyped up, like, and I'm counting in my head, I'm going over the contracts that I knew we would lose as a result of the airlines shutting down. And every year, my consulting team, because they were all independent, right, and they always resented the fact that I would have a meeting once a year where I would have my finance guy come in, because in consulting, when you're paid, here's this lump sum, but you've got to know how to divide that out. And we were paying them very well. And so every year I'm like, at the retreat, we're going to do this again. And I said, you guys, you need to know what I didn't know and I learned, right? So I wanted to share it with them. Some of them would appreciate it, some of them didn't. Mm-hmm. So after 9/11, we're driving, right? I'm canceling contracts in my head, just as I'm, and I know these people will not be able to work. And so we did a conference call, and I was literally from the car. And I said, well, you know those meetings where I talked to you guys about saving your money? And now it's time to use those skills, because we won't be working for a while. And everybody, the phone just got really quiet. And then one of the people said, you know, as much as we hated that, Hattie, thank you. Because we knew the business was going to shut down, at least for the next 6 months. Everything was canceled, probably for a year. In the most things that happened, it was me that was involved. But that was the time that the business was really tough. I mean, it was like whoosh, right off the monitor on all the international stuff. I mean, off. So I finally, after 18 hours, got back to Dallas. And you know, the first phone call was to my finance guy. And he said, where are you? And I said, just got home. He said, breakfast or lunch? I said, now.
It's like, you know, I think these are important conversations.
Yeah.
For me, I think my version of your finance guy was, I have this Latina banker.
Okay.
I don't think people find a personal banker enough. And again, when I started my business, somebody said to me, there's a Latina banker at such and such a bank. Yeah. And I called her up. And She was somebody that looked like me, and I felt comfortable. Yeah, yeah. And she's the one that explained to me lines of credit and, you know, how to use the, like, all the different financial systems in the bank.
Exactly.
Which I think in particular for, you know, women from traditional backgrounds, like Latinas or women from India or women from sometimes from Asia, we don't really fully understand the financial system.
That's right.
And that there are properties out there that will help you during these moments,
Absolutely.
You know? And when 9/11 hit for me, my company went, no business
okay,
too.
Okay.
And I was carrying a lot of overhead. And that made me really rethink, how many people can I have in my business that are outsourced?
Yep.
How many people do I keep? And I'll tell you, because this is why women laugh at me when I say, don't buy shoes, buy
buildings.
I owned the building we were in. I said, okay, we're going to squish into this corner. And we're going to rent the building.
Oh, nice.
And I started renting the building. You have to find other sources of revenue.
That's right.
But if you don't think like that, and again, I say this because so many women that we meet, Hattie, go, oh my God, you know, this went wrong. Well, things are going to go wrong.
Absolutely.
Right?
And I think that that's so important. And it's important to let people know that you're not always successful, that there are going to be these times. And, you know, I always go back to my roots, because my mother was like, you live under your means, you don't live above
under
them.
Your means.
Yeah, yeah. I drove the same car for 14 years. They
me
would
too.
Just kill me about, why don't you get a new car? You can afford a new car. It's not what you can afford, it's what do you need. I go see my clients on airplanes, so I didn't need a car. They didn't care what I was driving. I was always on the plane.
Well, you know what? And I say that especially to some of my own people, right? Because sometimes, and I get it, when you come from sometimes our backgrounds and you've never had anything and then you make some money.
Yeah.
And also because sometimes you do feel profiled when you walk into places. So you want to walk in with a very expensive car or you want to, you know, but I say it's not serving us because all the money that I made, I never lived greater. I bought buildings.
Yeah.
And even now, you know, I have a very nice Mercedes-Benz. I bought it with a U.S. tax incentive. And I think, again, we're not using all the assets that are out there for us. I always say the government gives coupons every year, whether it's federal or state, so you can buy solar panels, so you can buy a car cheaper. Don't just use the money and use your retail dollars.
Yeah.
You know, go look for all these incentives.
Well, and very often with women entrepreneurs, you think, and I see this now with a lot of corporate women, and coming into the food business, they use their own resources first. And it's like, no, don't do that.
No.
But again, if you don't have someone to say, here's how you do what you think is the right thing. You really want to understand how the finances are done.
So let's talk about corporate women, because we both, first of all, I've been a corporate woman, you've been a corporate woman. And yet we've gone into entrepreneurship, and yet we have a lot of love for all those women in corporations, and corporations are a great place for women to at least begin, because you learn on someone else's dime, kind of the systems, right? But let's talk about, because I know that I've been saying a lot, I think everyone should engage their entrepreneurial muscle, whether it's an hour a week or whatever. You've been inside these corporations, not just yourself working, but training people. And what do you see are some of the difficulties long-term if you don't engage some sort of entrepreneurial muscle? Because,
well, if you think about what's happened in corporate the last few years, right? There's so much transition. There's the 20 years and get the watch, or the 25 years, that doesn't exist
there's
anymore.
No Prince Charming.
There's no Prince Charming. There's
home or at work.
You know, it's all dope. What we teach women in corporate America is be an entrepreneur. You can be an entrepreneur in the organization, and because you still need to learn those skills, relationship building, operations, accounting, all the basics of running a business. You're doing that anyway. If you're doing a P&L in corporate, you can clearly do one
for yourself.
For yourself, right? But you have to make sure that you're learning the skills. The challenge sometimes in corporate is that you're overseeing the people, but you're not actually watching the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really want to watch the work. And so you'll actually learn those skills, because the day of tomorrow, that may not be there. And that's where a lot of the women actually, and I will tell you, the younger women that we work with are the ones who are coming out of college wanting to be entrepreneurs. That's their first thing.
I know.
I mean, there's no more, I'm ready to go for that watch.
Well, I also think when you look at the few women in corporate America that really kind of break the glass ceiling, they're women that tend to have a more linear path, right? They went to all the right schools, they're working their way up, they have the right mentors, and that is a percentage of our population, but it's not the great percentage of our population.
No.
Most of us have careers that have, or even lives that were, you know, look at Latinos with immigration, right, and where we have to take care of our parents, where we have a divorce, we're single moms, you know, I've been a single mom. So I think when you have these kind of lives that have obstacles, you know, entrepreneurship is built for obstacles,
that's right?
Right?
That's right.
And I also think that if you're in a corporation and you're not engaging in, you know, the shared economy in some way yourself, I mean, that's information you can bring inside your corporation,
exactly.
Right?
Right, right. Oh, yeah. I think that the world changed, right? So it was, once you were in that corporation, you didn't have to think about anything else. It's like once you worked for the government, you didn't have to think about it. It's all changed now. So no matter where you are now, you mm-hmm. can't just go, oh, I'm going to be here for the next 30 years, because that promise is not a part of our society. Mm-hmm. So having your, what did you call, hustle?
The side hustle.
Oh my goodness.
1 hour a week. You have to begin. You know, I tell women, I think it's like exercise. If you tell yourself, I'm going to exercise 3 hours a day, you're going to fail.
Right.
Because you're going to start off and then you're going to give up. But if you tell yourself, I'm going to walk 10 minutes, you might be able to accomplish that. Start 1 hour a week. Because the other thing I think that I find and that I want to talk to you about is when I ask women about entrepreneurship, that's why the book is called Self-Made. Instead of entrepreneurship, they don't really relate to that
exactly.
word. And they also say to me, well, that seems to me like if you're not Sarah Blakely, if you're not in the Forbes cover of the richest self-made women, you're not self-made.
No.
And in fact, let's talk about the opportunities in corporations like you and I did. You know, my first entrepreneurial thing was I was a consultant to uh-huh. a corporation.
Right.
And then I turned that into, they're my client now.
Right, right.
I turned it into an entrepreneur thing. I don't think people realize there's all different ways to be an entrepreneur.
Right.
Right?
Well, you know, the best jobs, if you think about it, I mean, I was probably an entrepreneur. I didn't even realize it. My mother used to sell Avon when we were kids.
So
we stuffed the bags. You know, we would line the little white bags up along the floor, and then she'd say, you know, this is Miss Woman. And so we were filling orders. I mean, I was filling orders with my mom, right? And I never thought about it. But those are those operational skills that whether you're in the company or on your own, you learn how to execute through the operation, right? I think that we don't often see when you sit down and come up with an idea that you're really good at, whether it's, you know, making flowers or, you know, any little thing. It doesn't have to be major.
It's not grandiose.
It's not done. As a matter of fact, most of the stuff is really good. Nobody ever hears about it.
Mm-mm.
But, it happens just because you're good at something. So I have a friend who just has always been a great cook. I said to her, you know, you should start catering. Oh, no. This was years ago. I tell all the time, you should stop and start catering. Why should I? No. It's a lot of work. No, you should stop and start catering. She finally started about 3 years ago. Now she's quitting the job and doing all the catering. But it was one of those things where in her mind, she just loved to cook. Well, that's where it starts.
It really does.
Right?
It really does.
I mean, I have a sister who bakes pound cakes, and she just bakes the best cakes. I'm like, why don't you monetize that? And she's like, nobody would pay my, yeah, they would. You know, so it's not, I think sometimes when we use entrepreneurship, just the word is intimidating. So that's why self-made is so good. This is just something
you're
that
you're working
I made.
On yourself from the inside
exactly.
out. You're looking at all the options, right?
Right, right.
And I think, again, I feel like there is this information gap for women where they don't realize there's entrepreneurial available money in corporations,
right.
in the government,
right.
in nonprofits,
right.
In contests, right? There's hidden money in America for all of us that can turn into an entrepreneurial venture.
Well, you have the companies. So when I spent all my time in corporate, they're talking about how do we find women-owned businesses? We want to do contracts. And they can't find the women. Now, the women go, whoa, I'm over here. But there is a great divide between those what the company's looking for and these women with the services. And so we constantly try to look to put those two together because they really do want to do business with women-owned businesses.
Of course.
And really, if you think about the future of this country, it truly is in small business owners. I
it
really
is.
Do think
I
so.
Feel like, you know, I always say the sleeping giant in this country,
right.
I believe, is women.
Right.
And women own small businesses.
Right.
Because we're the ones that are creating jobs, opportunities, and ideas. We're creating ideas. We're solving problems.
Well, and that's where women get into business, right? If you want a woman to be successful, let her find a problem, and she'll go fix it.
She'll go fix it.
I mean, think about all the things that we see that women have invented over the years, right? I don't care if it's, you know, a way to carry the baby differently or, you know, something.
A mop.
A mop.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, a mop. Anything. It's just that when we see a problem and we're trying to get it done, you know, we can do more with Velcro, for example.
We can.
Women can take something simple and make it work. Mm-hmm. I think where we often stop is it's a great idea, but the thought of making it into a business is where we stop.
Right.
Yeah.
And
it's too
I
much.
Think, again, it's because we don't go back to getting ourselves a team. You know, I think, I don't know if I told you this, but when I was on Celebrity Apprentice, Gene Simmons uh-huh. was this incredible guy that I worked with, and he's the KISS guy, but he's really just a very smart marketer, right? And he said something to me that was very painful to hear, but very true. He's like, Galan, I feel like you work hard, not smart. And I'm like, is he putting me down? What is he saying? Yeah. But what he was right. He goes, you have an incredible Rolodex. Why don't you open your Rolodex and ask for help? And listen, as a Latina, I can tell you, we are raised not to ask for help. Like, it's
right.
like a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's, I think it's our flaw. Because I do think that the people are out there to help you, just like your accountant, just like my banker. I think that there are plenty of people that own their own businesses, mortgage brokers,
right.
all these other organizations, that insurance, that are there to teach you and help you.
Right.
And, you know, and if you don't trust somebody, find somebody that looks like you for starters, mm-hmm. right? But also, we can't marginalize ourselves, because sometimes people outside of our own cultures know more about some of these things, and they can help us.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think of the inclusiveness of our world today, that we should be able to, one, just technology, reach out and find someone who's doing what you do or something similar, ask the question, find people you can trust, join organizations. So go and find the knowledge, and don't be embarrassed just because you need the help, because that's why we're all here.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
That's why.
So let's talk about the food industry.
Hold on. Moneymaker will be right back. Let's get back to the show.
I didn't really realize
how
many women in particular
right.
Work in all different parts of the food industry and are starting businesses, not just in food.
Right, right.
I mean, so let's talk about all the opportunities that exist for women in the food industry right now.
Well, if you think about food has become sort of sexy, right? It's
all over the
TV, it's everything, it's organic, it's gluten-free, it's everything.
And the chefs have become like superstars.
Exactly, exactly. So if you look at some of the emerging technology now around food, I mean, Uber Eats, Uber just, you know, I mean, everybody's doing it, right? And so what we started to look at is, it's not people, when they used to think of the organization, you work with like people in cafeterias. It's like, oh no. These are director level women and above, in mostly in corporations, but then we started to bring in the franchisees, people who just have great ideas and start them that impact food. So it could be a container that you want to put something in. It could be, you know, just how you distribute from one place to the other. So it's every level anything that's connected to what we call the food ecosystem, because it's really...
Yeah, janitorial. I realize
exactly.
There's a certain way to clean restaurants,
yeah.
and people have huge janitorial businesses.
Janitorial, I mean, just the basics of paper and, you know, the throwaway products. And I mean, everything that you use for the food world is where we play. And so there's so many opportunities, and there's so much, there's talent. Everybody's looking for talent. That's our new, when you talk to our board of directors or CEOs in this industry, it's all about engaging talent and keeping talent in the industry, because you probably did this, I did it. We all worked at some food place when we were kids or younger coming up, right? People work around food, but you don't see the food industry as opportunity. And so we're saying this is an opportunity. Lawyers, you know, finance people, HR, I mean, there's every opportunity. Marketing. So if you go into a company, there's every opportunity to be a part of that organization.
And I didn't realize it was so sexy. Like, when I talked to some of the women that were at your event, like, you know, they're working with, you know, restaurant chains that are around the world.
Right.
And, you know, when you, like Kat Cole, I spoke to her and she was so fascinating because she would say, you know, we'd open a restaurant in the Middle East and then all the systems and everything we have to, they're different. And you have to change. And
right.
So it's very exciting and it's very interesting work.
And so there's so much, if you love travel, if you love excitement, if you love, you know, whatever your passion is. I mean, Kat is a
cruises.
I mean, there's so much. Think about the food on a cruise.
How about these, all of these, like the Universal Studios, the Disneyland, all the food
businesses. Stadiums. Think about stadiums. I mean, there's food everywhere you go. I didn't notice, so let's go back to our earlier conversation. You never notice that there's opportunity around that you could say, okay, who brought that little business in? And a lot of the ideas for food, especially at, you know, stadiums and fairs, they started with somebody inventing something in their kitchen. I mean, that whole fried concept that's now a TV show, we started doing something like that at the State Fair in Dallas, you know, 20 years ago.
Of course.
And that it's everywhere. So for
and ethnic food.
Oh my
All
God.
Of a sudden, ethnic food, you know, like
popular, right?
You go to Miami, I would go as a Cuban girl to Miami and get like pastelitos and now they're everywhere. Now, you know, all the, because and you go around the world where sometimes in, you know, I was in Amsterdam and I was like, wow, ethnic food is the hot ticket here.
Really
you know,
is.
Hot ticket,
hot
you know?
Ticket.
So, you know, if you have aspirations of living around the world, I mean, I think it's very similar to the entertainment industry where people think that the hot ticket in the entertainment industry is making movies or TV shows. And in fact, in that business, that's now the hot ticket would be to be the caterer on movies.
Oh, nice.
The food trucks.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
The people that serve the movie industry, whether it's wardrobe, whether it's food, whether it's the same thing. When I went to your event, which I loved, I was just like, wow. Because I'll tell you the truth. If I had to do my life over again, and I say this often, I would be a franchise owner. I'm almost jealous that I'm interviewing some of your franchisee women because I wish I owned 10 McDonald's. I wish I owned 10. Because I realized as a Latina, my father was in the food industry. He worked for Goya Foods. And a lot of his clients were bodegas. And I now, you know, I realize how difficult is it to start a single bodega and shop without the advantages of multiple entities, right?
Right.
And I go, that's working hard, not smart, right? I wish I owned 7-Elevens or I owned McDonald's or I owned. And so, you know, I have like a wanderlust about that. But when I went to your conference, I realized there's other things. Mm-hmm. There's so many other opportunities we can, you know, tell our children too that they can get into.
But think about the franchising, because that's a perfect example. I think very often, especially with people of color, we have the food industry can be something where it's like, oh, I'm not sure if that's a positive job or not. And then I meet these operators, these franchisees who are multi-billionaires,
like so much money.
What did I do?
And it's cookie cutter. It doesn't mean you don't have to work hard. You do.
Right.
But like a lot of it is figured out for you.
Yeah, exactly.
So
there's a training manual
scratch.
That says this is how you do it, right?
Right.
And I think that years ago, I mean, I remember being at a couple tables where they were trying to get minority women to be franchisees. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. And then later it's like, oh, that was crazy. You should have done that. So I agree with you.
I mean, want us to think bigger. You know, right now I was, you know, since we both have such a great relationship with Coke is in the middle of bringing in all these diverse bottlers.
Absolutely.
And I think, why didn't we think like that, right? Why didn't we think we could be a bottler? Or why didn't we think we could do, you know, some, because they're real meat and potatoes businesses.
Right.
They're real.
That's right.
With real contracts, with real revenue, you know?
Exactly.
And what your part in it is, you know, the community. You have to know that if you're an owner of a McDonald's or a 7-Eleven or any of these franchises, that what you bring to it is, it still has to be Hattie's franchise.
Exactly.
Right? Nellie's franchise, what you bring into it. But so much of the hard part is figured out for you.
Exactly. The technical parts. And then you make it into your community. For example, I was on a panel with a gentleman from Ferguson that owned the McDonald's. And so he and I were together on this panel, and he started talking about during the riots, how because if you're in a community from an ethnic perspective, that they know you provide jobs, they know you provide food to the community, and they actually would say, when they'd see kids throwing rocks at his McDonald's, they'd be like, no, that's Mr., and they, you know, don't hit Mr. Williams' store. And he said, you know, they literally surrounded his McDonald's and protected it from all of that. And the only thing he said he lost in the store was milk. And so we're sitting on the panel, and the whole group of us were like, what? He's like, no, it's because of the tear gas, the spray in the eyes. And I never knew that milk would stop your eyes from burning. And that's, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
But he came out unscathed because people appreciated the food in the community, the jobs in the community. And that's what we have to remember is that often you go into an ethnic community and they see that you're given jobs and people are there for them.
You're taken care of.
You're taken care of, exactly.
Well, and I'm very excited by, right now, food trucks.
Yay,
food and by trucks all of these, as you said, home delivery services. Because I think it's a great way to enter inexpensively, test your idea,
right?
See if it really works before you take it to the next step. And I think one of the things people don't say often enough in entrepreneurship is a step-by-step thing.
Right.
You shouldn't go from 0 to 100. That's usually a recipe for disaster,
right?
Try something out because you learn in doing it what doesn't work about it.
Exactly.
Or maybe the products are too expensive. Maybe this. Maybe, you know, it's you're ahead of the time. It hasn't hit yet.
Right.
And so I love all these new businesses in the food industry that allow people to start with very little investment.
Right, exactly. Muhtar Kent said to me, the future in food is women.
I believe the future is women in all small businesses, but particularly food. I agree with him, and I think that, you know, I just think it's the sexiest business. I really wish I had gone into food, and I still may do it through my son. I may use him to get in, because I think it's just become a very different world in the food industry. It's an emerging business.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, my business, TV, is kind of going down. Mm-hmm. Food is like having a resurgence.
Absolutely. And it's the one place where women can start small, and you can just inch your way in. You know, you don't have to, it's like my sister with the cakes, right? You can inch your way in, but you can also learn.
So I think of you as a very wise woman and someone who's really grounded and solid. And, you know, I aspire to always be grounded and solid and wise. What would you say you wish you had known then that you know now? When you were a very young woman, what are some of the things that you go, young women, you don't get it?
Oh, wow. Let's see. If I could go back to my younger self, what I wish I had known was that it was just going to be okay.
I say that all the time. I wish somebody would have said, it all works out.
You know, now my mother said it 100 times. I just didn't hear it, right?
Right.
So knowing that it was going to be okay, knowing that the people who love you will love you no matter where you are. And I think the one thing that I did know and continue to know is the one thing that my mom said to me when I talked about going into business is that I still know I can go home. So if
That's
I ever
important.
Need it, I still
That's
know I
important.
Can go home. But yeah, when I look back, it was just, it's okay. Yeah.
And I think when I see you and I sitting here, I think, what an incredible time in the history of this country. We get a lot of noise about everything that's not right in this country, yet I feel so privileged.
Yeah.
And as a woman of color, I feel like never have there been more opportunities for us.
Absolutely.
And I think the world is our oyster and we got to go get it.
I think we go get it.
We go get it. We choose ourselves and we go get it.
Yep. And be self-made. I love
and
that.
And become self-made.
Yeah. No, I totally
And
agree.
It's not grandiose, whether it's an hour a week or you're Sarah Blakely with Spanx, we're all becoming self-made.
Exactly.
We're
totally
in the
agree.
Same boat.
Right, right. And also, here's the thing that's so critical about what you're doing, Nellie, and I'm so proud of to see the book and the launch and the movement, because you also represent the one thing that women had not seen, and it's the role models. That I don't have to wonder if there's someone who's self-made. I see that visual. I get, even at our conference, I had so many of the young women come up and say, oh, wow, you have these people of color, these beautiful women of color up on your stage. That's our job every day, is to get up and you know, we've been successful. We fail forward. We've been successful. Now it's about significance. And that means that we leave the world a better place. We leave the models there for these young women because that's what they need to know they can do it as well.
I think it's also important for these women to hear because a lot of women say to me, but it's so hard, this entrepreneurship. Nothing is easy.
Exactly.
Working in a corporation is not easy either.
Exactly.
But I want them to hear that you're seeing two women of color who are set for life.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we would have been set for life completely working in a company or in a corporation, I don't think people realize that to get wealth, enough wealth that you can retire and at an early age. And I'm not saying retire because neither one of us are retired, but we could be. And I think, I don't know that growing up, I saw a lot of women that looked like us that could say that.
No. You know, I think that it is absolutely an example that you want to set. But I, you know, when I look at people like Oprah, you know, you started thinking about who is some of the first true people of color who were business people, and you could tell that they were business and they were okay to talk about it. It gave us permission. And so we have to continue to talk
about it
to pass that on, that yes, you
can.
Well, and
that we're not J-Lo or Beyonce. Like, yeah. I think in our community, sometimes women that might speak like us have made it by being artists or athletes or whatever. And that's not the only way. I want women to see that you can, like us, start at the bottom and still at an early age get to a place of abundance. That it's not dirty to be abundant.
No, and oftentimes in the ethnic communities, abundance is looked at very differently.
Yeah.
But here's what I said to a group of young women of color at our conference, and they had pulled me to the side, and you know, we want to do this, and we want to be entrepreneurs. But what I also said is that you have to put finances in perspective in a critical role in your life. And that's why it's so great about it in your book. It is, and not just for yourself, because just like you, I mean, I have an 81-year-old mother. I take care of my mother, my nieces, nephews, people. Everyone. But you know how to do that in a way that that you leave it better than you found it.
That's right.
Right?
And I mean, we bring it back to our communities and to our families.
Yeah,
it's not like we're living grandiose here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
not.
I think that in order to make changes, multi-generational changes in our communities and in our families, you have to have money.
Absolutely. Oh yeah.
So we need to talk. It can no longer be a dirty conversation. It's important, you know.
Well, the gentleman I told you, Larry, who's my mentor, he said, it's not how much money you save right now, because I was like, I can't save a lot. I got bills. I mean, I started out bills and all that. He said, develop the habit of saving.
And I feel like money, if you come to it from the right place, it really grounds you in reality.
Right.
Not pie in the sky stuff.
Well, you know, I had a big transition. I sold my house after 28 years. And it was, I had a whole conversation with my family about it. Because I just decided, I want to move in a condo. I want to do this. And one of my nephews said this to me. He said, Auntie, he said, it's okay that you're doing this and we want you to be happy. But you were the model. You've been the model. He said, he's in his 40s. He said, you've been the model for me all my life. That you could have had a bigger house, you could have had a bigger car, you could have done this, but I watched how you managed. And he said, as each one of us needed something, you were always there, but you wouldn't just give it to us, you made us work for it.
But that's correct.
That's what you need to do,
grounded.
Right, that's grounded. So you put money in its place. It's an important part of who we are, mm-hmm. but it's not all of who we are.
That's right. I love you, Hattie.
I love you.
Moneymaker is a production of Money News Network. Moneymaker is written and hosted by me, Nelly Galan. Our executive producer is Morgan Lavoie. Thanks for listening. See you next time.